Equities once again traded with a bucket full of enthusiasm, helping the cattle complex work to the upside. But wheat was an anchor on corn and soybean trade, and USDA corn crop conditions may have signaled the start of some supply-side uncertainty for that market.
Live from a June-erific Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we welcome Philip Strebel from Blue Line Futures. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic checks in from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much, my friend. Yeah, cattle had a nice day.
They sure did. Yeah.
Yep. And we'll talk about the influence that the dollar had on the grain trade as well here coming up in just a little bit. But if it wouldn't have been for a rally in the dollar, I feel like corn could have performed better. Soybeans could have performed better. Wheat may have bounced off of the lows, but had a solid move to the upside in the U.S. dollar index, and as a result, made it difficult for the grains to get up and running today.
Well, and it wasn't a horrible day for corn and bean futures. I mean, just slightly lower-ish, but. Yeah. Definitely
well,
not,
and corn
not
was mixed.
What we want to see. Yeah,
corn was mixed. The problem is that July corn today had a high of 334.5, and we closed at 329.
Oh. Yeah, yep, you just know, couldn't hang on.
Yeah, so a nickel off the highs, and that...
So maybe it was a terrible day then.
No? I don't want to go that far.
Okay,
I don't
want to
say that it was terrible.
We'll moderate.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with moderation in
right,
there.
Exactly.
So, and like I said, crop condition reports suggest that, okay, maybe there's some incentive in that crop condition report for corn to build some yield uncertainty into prices. But we've got such a supply-side cushion, 2.3 coming out of the current marketing year. We've got enough acres anticipated to be planted that it's going to make it difficult to get enough of a cut to a yield to have a big enough impact on the supply side to really catch the market's attention. These are all things that we're going to talk with Phil Strebel about from Blue Line Futures here in just a little bit. Okay, buddy, let's get to it. What was throwing prices around?
Well, Chip, USDA says 15% of the winter wheat crop was harvested as of Sunday, and that suddenly turned into a round of hedge pressure. Harvest is expected to make solid progress this week and will likely increase hedge pressure. The U.S. dollar index started the session under pressure, but reversed course and was trading in the upper half of today's trading range as grain trade was closing. The rally in the dollar was met with increased selling in wheat futures. July hard red winter wheat, 7.5 cents lower, 4.38 1/4. July soft red slipped 8.75 cents to 4.96. July spring wheat, unchanged, 5.15 even, Chip.
Yeah, we couldn't even really respond to the to higher wheat prices in the Black Sea region, higher European wheat prices, just simply because you shouldn't anticipate much of a reaction until we actually see some sales taking place.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, USDA now rates 71% of the corn crop in good to excellent condition, down 4 points from last week. Traders were looking for steady conditions and crop deterioration, especially in the Western Belt. That helped corn prices work to the upside for most of the session. Nebraska now has 71% of the corn crop rated good to excellent, down 12 points from last week. And finally, 4% of the U.S. corn crop is rated poor to very poor. That's up a point from last week. July corn came within 0.25 cents of resistance at the June high, and that gave professional trading funds an opportunity to step in and defend short positions, resulting in a mixed close. July corn futures 0.25 cents lower, 3.29. September corn firmed 0.5 cents, 3.34 1/4. December corn closed at 3.42 3/4, up 1.25 cents today.
Man, Nebraska. Jeez, 12 points out of the corn rated good to excellent. There was some similar movement in Kansas, in Colorado, Texas. So it's that western area of the southern plains where we've talked about some heat and some high winds for the past few days that really it showed up in that Nebraska corn crop.
Well, Chip, it was risk on for soybeans in the overnight session, with prices following U.S. equities to the upside. But it was risk off in the bean market in afternoon trade, with the rally in the dollar weighing on all grain prices. Traders were also disappointed that USDA did not announce a bean sale in the daily reporting process. Soybean crop conditions were unchanged from the previous week. USDA rates 72% of that crop in good to excellent condition, and 4% of the crop is rated poor to very poor. July bean futures 2 cents lower, 867. August beans off 2, 868. November bean futures close at 873. That one's down 3 cents today, Chip.
Yeah, like you said, it wasn't a bad close in the bean market or a bad price performance. It's just that it was more evidence that if you don't feed the bull every day, it's going to be difficult to go to the upside. So without an announcement of an export sale, bean market slipped back.
July cotton was 106 higher at 60.07, and December cotton jumped 73 ticks to 59.08. And on the livestock side, Monday's Fed cattle slaughter got to 119,000 head. Chip, that's just 1,000 shy of year-ago levels. Yep. Cattle also felt spillover support from equities. August live cattle futures, 77.5 cents higher, 96.77.5. December cattle gained a buck to close at 103.87.5, and August feeders jumped 170 to 132.87.5. And on the snout side, hog slaughter is expected to top year ago again this week, and pork product prices are sliding as that industry tries to work through a huge backlog of market-ready animals. July lean hogs, 262.5 lower, 49.65. Deer, 137.5 lower, 52.57.5. Dang, four handle on the July there, Chip.
Yeah, it kind of stinks. All right, thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Chip?
Doing just fine. What are you watching in the grains?
I guess today's closes were kind of disappointing. I mean, you would have liked to have seen corn close higher on those declining crop ratings, but the weather forecast moving forward is probably the more important thing, and there's quite a bit of rain in the models and some cooler temperatures from now through the end of the month, and a lot of that's in that second week. But I don't know if there is enough of a threat. And you got to keep in mind, even with that decline in ratings, we're still on par with the five-year average.
Yeah. Yeah. The Pro Farmer Crop Condition Index is still actually a few ticks above the five-year average. So it's really, generally, it's in pretty good shape. What about over in the livestock trade, Joe? What you looking at?
Well, I think, as Davis mentioned, getting through – this backlog of animals in both the cattle market and in the hog market, I think, is going to be the issue. I think we got our demand back, but you know, it almost kind of reminds me of ethanol, where like we lost all this demand for a portion in time, and we've just got this kind of buildup that we've got to see, and it's going to take a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to take a while to work through it. July corn ran right up to that 334.5, came within a quarter of a cent of the month's high. Boy, it'd sure be nice if we could get a close above that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and the soybean market did something similar. We went up to a high from a week or two ago and backed off. So, yeah, we got some technical issues too.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yep, see you, Chip. Bye.
You bet. That is Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have a conversation with Phil Strebel from Blue Line Futures. We've got a lot of ground that we want to cover with Phil. Probably start with that technical picture. Find out what he thinks of the charts in corn, soybeans, wheat. That's next, right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Glad that you could join us today. By the way, if you missed this morning's conversations, they're worth listening to. go back, listen to them, and get on the app. Had a conversation with Phil Flynn from Price Group talking about the energy markets, and we had a conversation with Jessica, is it Klosterman? Yes, about Lincoln Premium Poultry, Costco's poultry. Mm-hmm. So, have a listen to both of those conversations. It's definitely worth your time. Definitely worth it. Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Let's have this conversation. Phil Strebel, Blue Line Futures. How you doing, Phil? Welcome to AgriTalk.
Hey, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. You bet. Let's hear about you. Where you been? What do you do?
Oh, man, I work with the famed one and only Oliver Slope. Sits right on the other side of me. So I joined Blue Line Futures over in January. And I work with, I do more of the macro picture, but I look at a lot of these different things and how fundamentals and technicals play a role in these things. So I get the pleasure of his commentary every single day.
Nice. Nice. That helps so much. Like I've got Davis. We can talk about and producer Joe Stackler. We talk about the news items, how it's really impacting things, the issues that we need to bring to the forefront. It's nice to have somebody that you can talk with about the markets on a regular basis, isn't it?
The power of numbers, just bouncing off ideas off of each other, trying to grow, trying to look at different things. You know, I mean, we might not meet up on – he might be a bull on something. I might be a bear on it. We both present our items to the table here. We come up with the best thing we can do for the clients. And, you know, it sure works out 9 times out of 10.
Right, right. We get an update, like you said, every week from Oliver about what is going on and what his thought process is. But tell us about Blue Line Futures. We haven't heard a whole lot about Blue Line over since Oliver's been on the show.
Yeah, so Blue Line Futures, we're an independent introducing broker. I mean, we offer a flexible and customizable approach to trading that suits kind of all traders, shapes and sizes. We've got institutional style research. You know, with a lot of your grain readers, they subscribe to our Grain Express. That covers all your ags, and then also we've got the livestock roundup, so it covers it as well. It breaks down the fundamentals, the technicals, some of the proprietary levels, and it gives you an actionable bias in the market. So, you know, whether you're a hedge or a speculator, we're here for you to help.
Nice, nice. All right, let's take a look at the charts. The corn market in particular came within a quarter of a cent of this month's high, and then it turned right back around. It's like the funds decided, hey, that's close enough. We can step back in and defend a short position in here. Is that kind of how you saw the market develop today?
It is. And I'll tell you, once we got close to that high end of the level, you thought the trading floor was still rocking and rolling over here because we were really pulling through for that breakout over the 4-star resistance right at the June 8th highs at 334.75. So, you know, I mean, the fundamentals kicked in a bit. We saw some of the technicals kick in. We saw a lot of sellers there. You know, I mean, we're watching for that dryness in Nebraska and Dakotas and how that's going to impact, you know, crop progress reports in the coming weeks. And, you know, we're also monitoring a lot of the outside market forces, specifically in the energy space. You know, when crude oil starts kicking in, we saw sugar prices breaking through the 200-day moving average, crude oil right near $40 a barrel. We thought that was going to be enough, that it was going to get the ethanol chatter talking, and we were going to bust through that resistance point, and we were going to go. So, you know, I mean, you know, the key to trading, risk-reward, we're going to fight to live another day, and I think we'll get that breakthrough to the upside soon enough.
What does that get us if we do get that close 335 or higher? What all of a sudden does that project to?
Old resistance, new support. Starts putting in some of these higher levels up here, and it gets people going. We'll have a real market on our hands, not this sideways market. You know, it's tough when these markets don't move at all for month after month after month. Yep. You get a couple key breakouts to the upside, all of a sudden gets a little bit of buying behind it, gets some of those funds short covering, and that market starts to move on up in the, you know, in the direction the tide has turned.
Yeah. Yeah. And wouldn't it be nice, you know, from a farmer's perspective, if it would be the incentive, kind of that trigger to get the funds to start covering some more of the shorts that are in the market, or are they doing that very quietly in this market right now?
You look at how the funds are playing. A lot of these commodities outside are having wild volatility, wild moves. I mean, we're seeing, you know, 5% moves in the hogs today and rough rice. The oats are almost 5% down. You know, you get lumber and heating oil up to over 3%. Volatility is here. So these funds, they've got a lot to deal with and a lot of outside influences as well. So, you know, there's no telling how it's going to play out, but we are slightly leaning. We got to break through that four-star resistance so we can go from there.
All right. All right. What levels are you watching in beans?
So shift into the beans here. We've got four-star support, 861 to 857. I mean, we're favoring a breakout to the upside. You know, China's been a strong buyer. You got to watch the dollar index. We've also had that bullish tilt on the USDA with the ending stocks tighter. You want to keep an eye on the dollar. The Federal Reserve is trying to devalue the dollar, and there is no coincidence. If you look at the dollar index chart in a mirror, it looks just like the bean chart, meaning that we've got that bear flag going in the dollar. We've got the bull flag going in the beans.
Right. And that the trade in the dollar has got to be having an influence on the wheat market too, right?
Yeah, I mean, man, look at that wheat right there. Yeah. I mean, we saw, you know, quite a bit, you know, the supply fundamentals, they're a bit burdensome. We've also got the market. It's dipping in that oversold territory, but we've come down to this triple support level right around $5 on the September wheat. You know, we might kick in with a little bit of short cover in there. Some bottom pickers will come in, but we need some of the fundamentals to change from this oversold condition to turn things around.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was kind of funny. USDA yesterday in the crop progress report puts winter wheat harvested 15%. And all of a sudden today, every place I looked was talking about hedge pressure in wheat, hedge pressure in wheat. Well, it may not be the 15% that was harvested at, up to Sunday, but we've got what looks like it should be a pretty good week to get some wheat out of the field, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, the spring wheat, 95% emerged, good to excellent rating, right at that 81%. You know, it only had a small dip down there. You know, the expectations from the wheat, you know, inspections, they came in lower end of expectations. So it doesn't have that driving force it needs behind it. But, you know, I mean, we get these other grains starting to move up a bit. We get some of the outside influences to turn bullish. We could see some bottom pickers come in here. We're not super optimistic, but this chart pattern definitely has completed itself with that the double and the triple bottom on the longer term phase.
Okay. All right. So thinking macro and like huge picture, on the commodity world right now, you've mentioned the dollar. We've talked about that. The Fed has thrown so much money out here, but the velocity behind that money supply still feels light. I don't know if it's going to turn into inflation that could help the commodity world in general or not. Phil, what are you thinking?
Look, you can print all the money in the world you want, but you cannot print jobs. You cannot print cash flow. Yeah. You know, demand needs to come back. The supply has been damaged in some different commodities out there. But you could have, you know, just even a slight bit oversupply. But if you don't have any demand, prices need to keep going lower. And it's really unfortunate because, you know, it looks like in some areas of the country, the coronavirus is making a small, you know, resurgence. Yeah. You know, we're seeing you know, some of these states, they are delaying some of the reopening process. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the country. There's a lot of, you know, macro things. There's a lot of, you know, in Chicago, it was unfortunate. We had protests, riots, things like that. Yeah. That curbed some of the demand. Some of these, a lot of these restaurants and bars are able to reopen that directly impact commodities and some of your meats and cattle and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they're not reopening as fast because they're worried about the situations that have been going on.
Right. But, boy, that retail sales number that came out this morning, Phil, that was a good one.
It was a good one on a temporary basis, but, I mean, you look at how things have developed. If your business and you're a retailer, it was shut down in February, you know, you had to liquidate all retail product that you had at any and all costs. And then it's unfortunate because a lot of these places, they went a week or two ago when they were getting ready to reopen, they bought all new inventories. It shows that little bit of a spike up, and then it was looted, and then they had to buy it again and rebuild their business. So, you know, we're going to need a little bit longer on retail sales before we have any conviction out here. So,
excellent point.
We did.
Yeah, excellent point. Okay, we're going to continue the conversation. I can't believe the music's playing already to end this segment. But we're going to continue the conversation with Phil Strebel from Blue Line Futures. He made an interesting comment to me in the notes that he sent me before the show. U.S. equities, wide range. This is not a bull market. I need an explanation of that. We'll get it. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Russia plans to control grain shipments via export quotas in the second half of the 2020-21 marketing year. July to December, no limits, but the quota will take effect for January through June. Abares trims beef export forecast to China, expects big jump in wheat exports. U.S.-China will allow more flights. The U.S. Transportation Department is amending its order to allow Chinese air carriers to fly four weekly flights between China and the United States. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will meet China's top diplomat in Hawaii tomorrow. And India has confirmed that three of its soldiers were killed on the border with China. Hey, check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. The Dow is up 465. S&P is up 52. NASDAQ up 150 points right now, getting in the last half hour of trade. We're talking with Phil Strebel from Blue Line Futures. Before we get back to that conversation, let's get a recap of how the grains closed and the livestock closed from Davis.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat, 7.5 cents lower today, 438.25. July soft red slipped 8.75 cents to 496. July corn futures were a quarter of a penny lower, 329. Dease corn closed at 342.75. That's up a penny and a quarter. July soybean futures were 2 cents lower at 867. November bean futures closed at 873, down 3 cents today. And July cotton was $1.06 higher at 607. 6.07. Yeah. On the livestock side, August live cattle futures 77.5 cents higher, 96.77.5. August feeders up $1.70 to 132.87.5. July lean hogs 262.5 lower, 49.65. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Phil Strebel is with Blue Line Futures. He's my guest today. Phil, we got a reminder, everyone. If you've got any questions for us, go ahead and send us a tweet. Include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way, I'll be sure to see it. You can also give us a call, 855-482-5524. This one from at Deering Tanner, Phil. He says, with all the roller coaster in the general economy, do funds look at grains as a technical pillar where they can rely on less volatility? And if not, what incentives do they have to push higher with the seasonalities just about worn out? That is, new crop pricing coming into the market.
So when you look at the way the funds look at things, and it's really interesting because some of the funds were mentioning a lot of different commodities out there that normally only play in the macro sense. And what they look at is when the Federal Reserve is coming in and they're actively devaluing the dollar, ultimately they're going to create some form of inflation pressure that may not be felt through specific economic data that's released. We already seen that if you go right now to the grocery store and you know over the past 2 months, those prices in that grocery bill have risen. So because of that dollar decline, the funds will start looking at things like hard assets and also those specific commodities. And really the two that they were talking about today was the copper market and the corn market, thinking that they're going to have some upside pressure, and especially if things get going in China.
Gotcha. What's precious metals been doing through all of this, Phil?
It's been a wild ride. The other markets, if you look at gold, the gold investors are actually extremely disappointed. In the last 3 months, we've been in a range from about 1671 on the downside to 1789 on the upside. One would think that without interest rates being lifted for the next 2 years out, the Fed having to use targeting a devalued dollar, this is a perfect storm for the gold market. Gold tends to come up, but gold, you have to look at it in other against other currencies. It's broken out to the upside in many different ones, but against the U.S. markets, it seems to be somewhat stagnant. The other precious metal out there, silver, the problem that it faces is that it often wears two hats, and industrial demand has not picked up, right, and that tends to come into the market.
Right, right. Excellent, excellent. So you've talked about ranges, or the word ranges has come up a few times. So when you're looking at the equities, is that why you are saying that we're not in a bull market yet? Because technically, we're still in a range?
Yeah, and this is the debate that I was having with my partner, Ryan Gorman. We were talking about some of the underlying fundamentals. If you look, there are 150 million eligible workers that are out there. You know, you got to take out the people that are the little kids and the elderly people, and that's the work pool. 29.5 million are getting some form of assistance. Okay, they're not coming in here. They're not driving demand. They're not on the corporate side. That's why we don't believe in the retail sales number. We don't believe in, you know, many of these different economic numbers that are coming out. So the volatility in the markets, we talk about, like you said, ranges. You have a 700-point average true range in the Dow Jones, the mini Dow Jones, 256 points in the NASDAQ and 83 in the S&P. That's $4,000 to $5,000 per contract. It's moving on a day-to-day basis. You tell me what investor, what IRA, what 401k, that is appropriate for as a long-term investor. That's a trading, gambling market.
Hence the Robin Hood traders, right?
They've been shocking. You know, I mean, you see Hertz go from 40 cents to $6 back to two, and the Robin Hood traders are throwing they're rioting in Sherwood Forest because of the fact that the markets are whipping around like this.
The guy from Barstool was on Fox Business this morning, Phil.
I'm shocked.
You know what's his? Day Trader Dave.
Yeah, Day Trader Dave needs to go back to taste testing frozen pizzas. You know,
is that Dave Portnoy? I think
Portnoy.
It never ends well, because what happens is the day that it's 700 points against him, what's the guy going to do? He's going to double down on his position. Double down on his position, and unfortunately, he doesn't understand that it's about keeping your powder dry, balancing risk to reward. And the other thing is that he's probably not using real risk management, which says on the stock side, your biggest long position should only be 6%, okay, of your portfolio. That's how you have a well-diversified portfolio. Yeah. This guy is probably going all in. I'm just guessing, you know, based upon the high degrees of emotions.
You know? Right. Yeah.
So how many times do you go all in at the blackjack table until you end up going bust?
That is exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, let's take the conversation over to livestock, and let's go straight to cattle in this case, because it felt like the cattle complex did get some help from a 400, 500-point move to the upside in the Dow today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Dave Portnoy gets this 1,000-point move to the upside in the Dow or whatever, he's probably going to have a big barbecue, and it's going to support those livestock prices. So now the reality is that we dipped into pocket support, 93.65, may have attracted some kind of buyers. You know, ultimately, though, heavy production could weigh in, and we're going to have to just continue to monitor, you know, box beef cutout values coming into the reopening of the economy and ultimately into the 4th of July.
Yeah, we still need to get – we're still missing that food service and a big chunk of the restaurant demand from the pork market, from the beef market. We can't lose track of that, especially with that backlog of market-ready animals out there. Technically, the cattle market feels pretty good, doesn't it?
It doesn't look too bad. I mean, you know, I swear if you overlap the silver chart with this cattle chart, though, you'd be amazed.
Oh, really?
So, you know, there's something weird about it. It's got like a small head and shoulders pattern there. But, you know, I mean, it's easy if we see a pickup in demand. We see strong reopening. I'm dying to go out to, you know, a Gibson's restaurant, get a steak, yeah, and fill it up. We don't in Chicago. We're big restaurant people. Yeah. We're big steak. And the thing is that there's five tables on the little patio because real estate is so prime here that that's all that they're able to sell. They're not able to fill in a pack house of 500 people. And surely we're not going to be having any, you know, holiday parties there, you know, because we can't get the group gatherings together. But I think ultimately demand will pick up, you know, and we're going to see prices turn around. But we got to eat through that supply. That's for certain.
But you've got Pritzker saying you still need to keep your gatherings to 10 people or less. But I think that rule applies to everybody but him.
That's true. I mean, he's at a restaurant in Wisconsin eating like no other, you know?
Yeah.
So it's
unbelievable.
You know, the rules are so strange in the city of Chicago, you know, in Illinois. It's mind-blowing. I just want to go for a run on the lakefront, man, by myself. Don't have anybody near me, you know.
Yeah.
Go back to the beach, stuff like that. You just can't do it right now.
Right. Okay. Real quick, technically on hogs, boy, that August contract kind of broke down today. Had the lowest close. Well, the lowest close of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, that was back down. I mean, we've been monitoring it, and it's like the report starts off every day. Lowest level since May something. Lowest level since May another thing. And now we had that big washout today. You know, I mean, some of the weights, they've been saying that they're a little bit lighter. You know, 4 weeks of lower lates. Could be some supply issues out there, but, you know, it's just a wait and see. You need some catalyst to get these markets going back up. And, you know, I think, again, I keep pounding the table that it's a reopening process, and it probably is.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so if we can get this, get that demand back, especially if we could just get a market for the bellies going again and bring that would be a strong indicator that we do have some of that restaurant demand back. Just simply because we're using bacon as a condiment again.
That's the number one people that use that. Restaurants are the number one users of bacon and certain pork products, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, I'll order a bacon cheeseburger every time I go out. But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to grill bacon for my cheeseburger on my grill. I'm going to end up burning the bacon. The whole place is going to go up in flames.
That's exactly right. Phil, this was fun. Thank you so much for making time for us. And if it's okay with you, we'll do it again sometime.
Love to be back on. Thanks, guys.
Excellent. That is Phil Strebel. He is with Blue Line Futures. Sits right across the desk from Oliver Slope, who will be with us again on Thursday for the perspective on price action. All right. When we come back, Davis and I will put a wrap on today's second hour of AgriTalk.
You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Really good conversation there with Phil. We'll have him on again, Davis. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. So we were talking about the Robin Hood traders and the day traders, Day Trader Dave, and everything. It started because with Day Trader Dave, because he didn't have sports to bet on. So instead of not playing the game, mm-hmm. he played the game with stocks instead of betting on sports. Mm-hmm. Hey, more power to him. If that's the way you're wired, that's the way you're wired. Go for it, mm-hmm. dude. That is fine. But it's an element that I felt like for a while, like up until about 3 weeks ago, I felt like, okay, we can ignore that. It's not that big of a deal. And then all of a sudden, we had that day when we were like 1,800 points lower. Remember?
Yep, I do.
In the Dow. And a lot of it was on profit taking and aggressive profit taking. And day traders were stepping in. They'd wait for a stock to get pounded, and then they'd step in and they'd buy it. It would bounce $2 or $3, and then they'd sell it with aggression. Some mm-hmm. of them were losing money while they were doing this, but it was accelerating things to the downside. And it was fascinating to watch, to the point that the amount of day trading that is happening in the market right now can't be ignored anymore. It just can't be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we really answered all of the elements of at Deering Tanner's question. I want to go back to it.
It was a great question.
Yeah, it is.
Series of questions, yeah.
Right. And I want to break it down a little bit. I don't think that the funds are looking for less volatility. They aren't afraid of establishing a position and sticking with it. That's how we continue to build this big short in the corn market, of course. At the same time, they kind of like the volatility. If they can do some more day trading in commodities, professional fund managers will jump in and participate in that in a big way. So I don't think that they're looking for less volatility. I think if there was more volatility in here, I think that it may be some incentive actually to go ahead and pull out of those positions that are getting some age on them. And we could see some overall short covering take place in the corn market if the volatility would start to increase in here. Low volatility means comfort for an established position. That, and man, when they're comfortable, Davis, they just hang with it.
Right.
So,
right. And that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Keep going until something tells you to do something, and then do that. Yeah.
Right. What incentives do they have to push higher with seasonalities just about worn out? In other words, and he says, i.e. new crop pricing that is going to be coming to the market if it hasn't started to show up already. And some of it has. Good point. We've been talking about the need for a fundamental trigger. I've been looking for the potential for a technical trigger to get the funds to cover short positions in corn and to establish a bigger long position in soybeans and just bring more speculative action to the long side of these markets. It's really tough to find right now, and it's tough to mm-hmm. find the trigger in here. It's a good point that you're making, Tanner. It's a really good question, and one that I don't know what their incentives are to step onto the long side of the market in many cases. Now, we do have the deteriorating crop conditions. We can't forget that. Is it broad enough as of right now to cause some supply side concerns? Not really, because like I said, you know, we've got $2.3 billion at the end of the current marketing year. We've got, if we did plant 95 million acres, you've got to take, if we're going to get rid of a billion bushels, you're going to have to lose, what is it, 13, 14 bushel per acre from the 178.5 that is in the balance sheet right now. I'm not seeing anything out there that would suggest that kind of a yield hit right now. Not right now. I don't know, man.
And it's
comfort is here.
Right. And it's not like when equities started to dive several weeks ago mm-hmm. that everybody hopped out of there and piled in to commodities.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that even pressure on, you know, other markets would necessarily help out with that at all.
We've been talking about that with Bubba, and I'm not calling Bubba out on this because I expected it to happen at some point too. Long before we got to 29,000 in the Dow.
On the
initial run up to the highs, every 1,000 point marker, I'm thinking, okay, that's going to be it. It's going to run up to 24,000 and that's going to trigger some profit taking, and that money's going to flow over to the commodities. Didn't happen. Same thing at 25, 26, 27. It just kept chugging along. It was pretty phenomenal to watch. And the recovery that we are into right now is pretty phenomenal to watch as well. One note that I did make from Phil was that, you know, it's one of the reasons that we don't buy some of the economic numbers that we're seeing right now. So it's kind of a questionable recovery in Phil's eyes that we could be seeing in the economy right now. National Weather Service 6-10 day outlook, June 22nd through the 26th. Normal to below normal temperatures across the Corn Belt. Above normal precipitation expected over most of the Corn Belt. Minnesota, the Dakotas, northern Nebraska would be the exception where normal to below normal precipitation is expected. All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. That's from Davis and from producer Joe Stackler. Come back tomorrow morning. We've got a Farmer Forum. Brad from Arkansas, Nancy from Wisconsin.